Good to be here, and I do appreciate the opportunity. Turn, if you would, to Acts chapter 25. Be continuing there. It is a fairly short chapter, and as such, the message tonight might be a bit truncated. I finished a little early, but that provides more time for prayer anyway, so that's good. As usual, I'd like to start by just doing a quick recap of kind of what's gone immediately before and get a sense of the context. Paul, of course, is on his final journey, his journey to Rome, where he will be imprisoned and eventually executed. He's currently in Caesarea, which is in the northern part of Israel, and at the time was the center of Roman government there in Judea. And you can think a little bit about his situation there. I remember back in chapter 23, the Lord had told him that he would be a witness for him in Rome, that he would go and share the gospel there. And immediately after that, the centurion escorted him to Caesarea to stand before Felix, to stand trial there. And that could have given him hope that he was well on his way to Rome, to getting to stand before Caesar and to witness there. But remember now, he's been in prison for 2 years. And it wouldn't be surprising to think that he was beginning to get discouraged with no end in sight to that captivity. And then Felix was replaced at the end of chapter 24 and recalled to Rome, where Festus took his place here in Caesarea. And in hopes of raising his approval rating, as it were, in case Rome investigated his administration, he left Paul in prison for Festus to deal with. So that's kind of the situation. That's Paul's current state. With that in mind, let's just read the first 6 verses to get started. Acts 25 and verse 1. It says, "Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him, and desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down into Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought." It's sad to see here in these first few verses how low the high priest and the scribes were willing to stoop in order to silence Paul. They were willing to hire assassins to stand on the way and to bribe a official to send him to Jerusalem in order that he might be captured along the way and killed. And to think that they did this in the name of religion, even they would say in the name of God. And there's a multitude of examples throughout history of men who, in the name of God, laid aside morality in order to accomplish their own gains, in order to advance their religion, they would say. But of course, their real goal was to enhance their own power and to take away any perceived threats to their influence and to their position of power and of glory. And they were willing to do that, even if it meant breaking the very law of God, the very law that they were pledged to uphold and to enhance. Thankfully, Festus refused to send Paul to Jerusalem, and it's unlikely that he knew about the plot to kill Paul. There was no way he could have known. But he was standing on protocol, deciding that Paul would be tried officially in the Roman court there in Caesarea. And it's good to see that as soon as Festus returned, immediately the next day he assembled the court and began the trial. So let's look at the next 6 verses, 7 through 12, to get a look at the mini trial, as it were. Verse 7 says, "And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about, and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these things before me? And said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof they may accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. Notice especially in verse 8 the charges that Paul addresses. He addresses the charge against the law of the Jews, the temple, and against Caesar. And most importantly to this trial, he denies the charges that he somehow wronged Caesar. In other words, the other two, that he insulted the Jews or the temple, didn't fall under the jurisdiction of the Roman government. And therefore, Festus wouldn't have been called in to judge those two. Obviously, the leaders of the Jews, in order to find more accusations to throw at Paul that would merit the death penalty, had accused him of treason. It says in verse 7 that the Jews laid many and grievous complaints against Paul. And apparently they just threw a bunch of jumbled accusations at him, hoping that some would stick and that some would be, that he'd be convicted of some. And treason was apparently included there. And this charge of treason probably came in the form of inciting political unrest or instigating rebellion by preaching that a new king had come, one that would supplant Caesar. And this is similar to the charge against Christ himself, that he was setting himself up as a new ruler in Israel. And I think this was a popular one to bring before Roman officials for a good reason. The Jews were well known for being very volatile when it came to their religion, when it came to when their religion was threatened, because they viewed their religion as a very large part of their national identity, that they were God's chosen people, that they were set apart because of it. And because of that, many of the rebellions and revolutions in the nation of Israel came about through religious beginnings. For instance, the Maccabean Revolution, in the time between the books of Malachi and the New Testament, that arose when Antiochus Epiphanes set up an altar to Zeus in the temple and sacrificed a pig and defiled the temple. In that case, a rebellion based on religion led to Israel's independence for many years until they were conquered in 63 BC. And so Roman governors in general had learned that it was best to leave the matters of the Jewish religion in their hands and not to try to control that. It was because of that that they could prosecute anyone who defiled the temple, who took Gentiles in, and we saw that back in chapter 21. So then they accused Paul of inciting riots and rebellion, probably on the basis of some sort of political messianism, that he was setting up a new government, a new order. So with that in mind, we get a sort of a glimpse of Festus's quandary, similar to Pilate's situation back with Christ. None of the charges stuck. We see that back at the end of the chapter, or even here. We see that he couldn't find any fault in him, and he couldn't make any of the charges stick. He couldn't convict him of anything. But at the same time, he couldn't release him. He couldn't let go of someone who was charged with treason, with rebelling against Caesar, and with inciting rebellion. And again, Festus was a new governor. He had recently come in, and if word got back to Rome that he had this soon dismissed a case regarding treason and rebellion against Caesar, it would reflect very badly on him. And at the same time, he couldn't afford to ignore this case, because that would put him in bad standing with the Jewish leaders there in Jerusalem, in Israel. And they were still a formidable political foe, and he'd been anxious to remain on good terms with them this soon in his administration as much as possible. And it's for that reason that he, in verse 9, suggests that Paul go to Jerusalem to resolve the trial. He may have even intended for the Sanhedrin to take part in the judgment of the trial, take part in the proceedings. And Paul refused, not only because going to Jerusalem would be taking a step back in his journey to Rome, but also he knew that in Jerusalem all the weight of religious fervor and bias would come to bear from the mobs and from the leaders in Israel. In other words, Festus would be under tremendous pressure public opinion. There we go. Public opinion, and also from the leaders there, to convict Paul, regardless of guilt and regardless of what was actually true. In verse 10, Paul points out to Festus that even he knows that the charges are baseless, that there's nothing that they can convict him of as regards the law or as regards the temple. So it was only proper to hold the trial there at the Roman headquarters in Caesarea. Of course, we have to point out, as it were, Paul's ulterior motive in all this. His view was fixed on Rome. He was on a trip to Rome eventually, and he was already planning to appeal to Caesar at this point to get there, and even to get a free ride on his way. And besides, even if Festus acquitted him here in Caesarea, the same charges could be brought against him elsewhere at a different time by different people. But if Caesar declared him innocent, the matter would be settled throughout the whole Roman Empire. I think Festus was eager to grant his request because it absolved him of the responsibility of the consequences of the decision either way. In other words, if he declared him guilty without a charge, that would be unjust of him. But if he declared him innocent, he would lose the good opinion of the Jews. At the same time, though, this made a new problem for Festus. Paul was appealing to this higher court, but this court here hadn't yet reached a verdict. And so Festus had nothing concrete for Paul's appellate trial. There was nothing that Paul was really appealing. There was no conviction, no decision that he was appealing a decision on. And we see in verse 26 later at the end of the chapter that he needed to give a listing of the accusations and of Paul's responses to the allegations. But Paul actually has mostly refrained from defending himself to this point, simply saying in verse 10 that he was innocent of any charges. And it's interesting also to see that Festus didn't place enough trust in the charges of treason to even write anything about it. It wouldn't have taken much to be enough to write about, because that was a serious charge, and one that would be taken seriously in Rome. But he couldn't even find the smallest reasonable evidence that he could send along and would make it a reasonable case to appeal. And yet at the same time, on the other side of that, he couldn't completely ignore even the vague charge of treason against the empire. So with that in mind, let's read the rest of the chapter, beginning in verse 13. It says, "And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came unto Caesarea to salute Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, There is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have decision against him, or to have judgment against him. To whom I answered, It is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die, before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crimes laid against him. Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat, and commanded the man to be brought forth. Against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. Because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, thou shalt hear him. And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, with great pomp, and was entered into the place of hearing, with the chief captains and the principal men of the city, at Festus's commandment, Paul was brought forth. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, you see this man, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore I have brought him before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. So then the arrival of Agrippa and Bernice gave Festus the opportunity to conduct an informal inquiry, as it were, in order to determine some specific charges. But it didn't have the adverse results that could arise from an actual trial. And in the next chapter, in verse 3, it's mentioned that Agrippa was known to be an expert in Jewish law and customs. And Festus was interested to hear his opinion, and it was appropriate for him to see the trial. So Festus first related the relevant circumstances to Agrippa. It's interesting to see in verses 18 and 19 what he says about the accusations against Paul. In verse 19, he says the charges were related to the Jewish superstition, as he puts it. Some translations render this their religion, but a few put it even more strongly as demon worship. And it sort of gives the idea that Festus wasn't really sure what it was about, and was sort of belittling it, that it wasn't quite important enough for a Roman court, that it should have been settled in their own private. In the hearing of the leaders of the Jewish religion, and not before a Roman governor. And we see that in verse 18 as well, where he says, you know, these weren't the accusations that I was expecting, rather it was concerning the religion. And he mentions the topic of Jesus, who was known by the Romans to have been killed, and that Paul was asserting that he was alive, that he had rose from the dead. And this probably formed the basis of the accusation of rebellion and of treason. He says in verse 20 that he doubted of such manner of questions. That's a strange turn of phrase, but several versions translate this being perplexed or puzzled concerning the charges. The English Standard Version, similarly to Darby, renders it being at a loss how to investigate these questions. I think that gives the clearest idea of what he meant. Festus was new to the area, new to Israel and to its religion, and so he didn't have a very good grasp of Jewish religion and custom. Which is why he has suggested moving the inquiry to Jerusalem, again, not realizing the pressure he would have encountered from the religious leaders. So now he's glad to have Agrippa here to give an expert opinion, but also from a Roman standpoint. So once Agrippa had an idea of the situation, he decided he wanted to hear the defense of Paul as well. And then the next day, they all gathered together to hear Paul's message, in order to clearly define the accusations that Caesar would have to address. And that's where chapter 26 picks up, and we'll see Paul's defense before the Romans. Before the trial began, in verses 24 to 27, Festus stood up and explained the relevant points in order to summarize the reason for the trial and the case so far. So first of all, the Jews had requested the death penalty with these accusations. This wasn't a simple trial. It was a big deal, and they were searching for the most powerful conviction possible. Festus, after hearing the accusations, considered him innocent. And didn't see any reason for the charges. But Paul had eventually appealed to Nero, And so Festus had agreed to grant his appeal. And so he tells them that this trial, the purpose of it is to come up with a list of charges that they can send to Nero and to give a reason for the appeal. But it's interesting to see Paul throughout this. Throughout all this chapter and this situation and all the trouble that he goes through, he maintained his composure. He didn't lash out at his accusers or insult the court or even get discouraged after his 2 years in prison. He had a goal in mind that he was going to go to Rome to preach the gospel there. And he had the promise of Christ back in chapter 23 that he would do that, that he would get there and that he would be a witness, just as he had throughout the rest of the empire. And I think that bore him up and kept him going. In fact, it's interesting to see his attitude and to compare it to the attitude of Christ at his trial before Pilate, that he was humble and yet strong, that he was willing to stand up against these charges that were false and that had no basis in reality when accusers were looking for blood and were trying to kill him. We may end up in a similar situation at times, not probably at trial for our life, but having to answer for our faith, having to answer for what we believe and why we believe it and why we feel so strongly about it. And it may even involve false accusations, misconceptions about us. May we have the same attitude as Paul. May we come at it humbly and willing to do what we can to witness and to share our faith, even in those situations, even in the hard times when it's hard to be a Christian. May we have the faith and the guts to stand up for what we believe in. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we again thank you for the example of Paul, and it's amazing to see this man and the lessons we can learn from his life. And we just pray that if we get into a similar situation of standing up for our faith and standing up for Christ, that we would have that we would be willing to endure ridicule and difficulty, that we would be willing to witness for Christ, even in those situations. Pray these things in Jesus Christ's name, the one who died for us and who gave us the reason. Amen.